to this is episode 3 of season 6. They're starting to get a little troublesome to keep up with, so we may just start referring to them as the next episode of Mentioned in Dispatches. And back for a return engagement, we have both Mike and Ian. Mike, how are you tonight?
I am good. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Mike, for some reason, has the air conditioner running when it's 26 degrees outside. We're not really sure why, but I, you know. And then Ian is back with us again as well. Howdy, Ian.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Hope you're staying warmer than Mike is.
And tonight's podcast is all Ian's fault. This is 100%, because a couple weeks ago when we were talking game mods with these two fine fellows, Ian started a little digression about dice in one of the conversations. And we came to the conclusion that what we really needed was an entire podcast episode talking about nothing but dice. So if dice drive you nuts, right? If you're a card-driven sort of dude, or if you like using spinners, or if you're a Euro gamer who can't stand the idea of something being that random, this is probably not the podcast episode for everybody else. The wonderful world of randomness that is dice. You know, hop aboard, buckle in, because we're gonna talk dice for a couple of minutes. Hey, Ian, this is all your fault. We're gonna let you lead off. What do you got on dice?
So, I mean, I think we were just talking about the dice is a fundamental piece of the game, especially for wargaming. And when we were talking about game mods, I think it came up because I was talking like, yeah, even just taking some of the mods, taking a game and making it your own. The one that immediately jumped to mind was I got a Blue Water Navy by Compass Games, and you have two sides in there. You got NATO and the Soviets, but the dice that came in the game were black and white, and you know that's okay. They're dice, they work, but you know, wouldn't it be better if you just had blue dice for NATO and red dice for the Soviets? Maybe.
Absolutely.
And so all I did is I just went out to the front of the local game store and picked up a new set of dice and threw them in. And then that sort of started us down the track here. Do you modify a game? How do you modify a game? And even do you like your favorite dice? I mean, I think I was talking about another game there, my Conflict of Heroes. I automatically substitute the die 6 in the older ones because the one that came in the game never rolled well for me. So I just automatically that one goes to the side, and I go get my favorite little set of dice and bring those out because I know I'm going to do it better. I'm sure everybody does that.
Yep, the lucky dice that folks have there. So so you had a particular set of dice that you were teasing Mike with for your Starfleet Battles dice.
Does he still have that, or did it disappear mysteriously?
Oh no, I still have those, and you can't have them. So, no, just back in the day when I played Starfleet Battles heavily, Amarillo Design Bureau, Task Force Game, whoever it was, offered a set of Starfleet Battles dice. So, of course, I had to have my Starfleet Battles dice to play the game with. I mean, are they anything special? They're just a die 6 with a couple of fancy sides.
That's why they're special.
But exactly, that's why they're special, because if I want to be the Feds blowing up the Klingons, I need to roll my blue Federation dice. And when the Klingons fire back, they got to roll those black Klingon dice, because that is the way.
Exactly.
You mentioned playing Starfleet Battles heavily. Is there a way to play it lately? I mean, is there such a thing as a casual Starfleet Battles player?
Sure, you only use the basic rules.
Yeah, and even there. But even that's an 8-hour game.
No, it's done, right?
Not. Yeah. No, it's not.
You know, through turn six.
Okay, now through turn six, yeah. And you're gonna kick off another whole game pod here on what is complexity, and you know, are those games really complex, or are they just detailed? But we won't go there. We're talking dice.
Yeah, we'll get Gary involved for that one, because he did a whole Monday night counter clipping stream on game complexity one time.
Games. There you go. Yeah,
we'll get him involved for that one. So, Mike, what's the most unique set of dice that you've got? Not necessarily, you know, in your current locale, but within your collection, because I know you're split across a couple of places.
The most unique. That's an interesting way to put that. Unique. I've got a set of dice that I bought that are completely metal. I think those are kind of unique because I've never used them, and I don't know when I would ever use them. I've got a set of dungeon...
Intruder breaks in your house and you throw them at him?
They would be useful for that. I've got a set of Mutant Crawl Classics dice, glow in the dark.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of unusual.
Yes. that counts.
So those are the only two that are really – and I've got a set of the Game Science dice. Of course, who doesn't?
I'm not sure I have a full set of Game Science dice. I have a handful of individual ones floating around. I don't know as I ever bought a full set because aside from the fact that they were sharp enough to, like, actually damage your fingers – I never really saw a whole lot of fascination in the Game Science dice. I know a lot of other people put a lot of stock in the uber precision kind of stuff. And like, that was always, you know, Lou's big thing of, you know, these are perfect, you know, in their manufacturing with the warranty cards and everything. I just they didn't look all that cool. I just sort of shrugged and went, all right, I don't care.
So. I think I read something on that, and they say that, yeah, they actually are a little more precise, but in order for you to actually see that precision, you'd have to roll those dice for like 10 years straight, and then you start to see the spread. So,
yeah.
I'm okay with my Chessex dice. I
mean, yeah. And like, who uses the exact same dice for 10 years straight and only those dice? And like, not – like, I've got dice I've been using for 25 years, but not only those dice, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
With a set of – four Game Science dice. at the time, though, you know, that was, well, yeah, when I say at the time, I bought mine, most of mine I bought in the, '90s, when that was the big thing in gaming, is you go to the conventions and listen to, okay, we'll forget that. You go to the conventions and you listen to Lou, and you had these nice, at that time, really colorful dice. And that was what you could get. And the other stuff was, I hate to say that it was a Wargamer versus RPG sort of thing, but it was. There was the Wargamers, you were with your precise, you know, I'm going to roll these and these are well precision. I don't necessarily, you know, I don't even, I'm looking at my collection. I see a D20, but I mean, it's probably the least used dice in all those because you use the sixes and the tens and the ones that were marked with the tens, so you could do the tens and ones to get a die 100 out of it. But that was just the thing of the day. Nowadays, with so much production cost changed and big change, so much easier to produce dice. Yeah, the whole shtick about precision sort of falls away. And actually, looking at the dice, they actually aren't all that pretty. Most of mine were just the basic single colors, as Harold would say, boring pastels.
Yeah,
but you know. Nowadays, you get all these other fancy dice, which I'm sure we're going to get to. Chessex is one of the bigger ones, but there's a bunch of other fancy dice out there, too.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons I dodged the Game Science dice bullet a little bit was I remember seeing a lot of ads for the Game Science dice in Dragon Magazine and other places, but I was in Europe for a good chunk of the middle of the 80s. And so to get Game Science dice, to order those and have them sent to you would have been a real kind of pain in the butt. And then when we moved back to the States, we moved back to the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, because again, dad's in the military, you go where the bases are. And there was, we actually had a pretty good game store in town. It moved like 3 times in 2 years, but it was a good game store. They just couldn't stay in the same locations for whatever reason. And I don't ever remember them having the kinds of dice selections that you find in most game stores today, where they've got a ton of stuff under the glass counter, almost like they're, you know, it's weird that you go into a local game store and they've got all the dice under the glass counter the same way they've got the jewelry counter at the department stores. But that's just sort of how they're stored and displayed. But I don't remember that game store having the fancy dice counter where there's like a ton of stuff that you could go in and pick and choose. I remember them having lots of pre-bagged dice sets on, you know, on the pegboards on the walls. But you weren't picking out individual dice or like reaching into the fishbowl and grabbing, you know, figuring out which dice you wanted or anything. So it wasn't until years later that I was picking out sort of, I want that specific D20 kind of thing. That didn't happen for me for a long time. And so I think that's sort of how I dodged some of the Game Science love that a lot of other people had. And look, Lou got plenty of my money, right? I mean, there's plenty of other things that I ordered from him, but the dice were never something that I just felt like, oh my God, I got to have this. I managed to avoid that one.
Did you buy his special fancy giant roll anything die?
The D total?
Yeah.
I did not. And largely because one of the things with my dice is the way I store them here, I don't have a good place that I would be able to store that. I've got a couple of fish bowls, you know, these little terrariums from the Dollar Tree that I keep the dice on the table with me when I'm using them for killer games. But the dice that I've stored on shelves, I've got in these sort of squared off containers, these trainers that it's almost kind of decoration on the shelves. Nah. And I just don't have a good place to store that. Well, I don't know when I'd ever. Truthfully, yeah. Like for a die that theoretically could roll anything, it doesn't fit in your dice tower. It will knock over anything on the table if it gets out of hand. I mean, it's the size of a baseball.
It's another security thing that you can throw at somebody, intruders in your house.
I got a couple of those already. Look, man, I got a Great Dane. I don't need to throw stuff at people breaking into the house. Right? I'm good. Ian, you mentioned Chessex in particular as one of the dice manufacturers. There's obviously a whole bunch of dice manufacturers, and you guys, anybody that's been listening to the show for more than three episodes knows who I'm going to give some love to. But the Chessex dice, I think you had posted some pictures earlier today. You've got a couple of the, we call them cubes, even though they're more rectangles, but you got a couple of the cubes of like big sets of D6s. How many you got in one of those boxes? Is it like 36 or something?
So yeah, the one of them, they call them, I guess they call them the dice blocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yep, the dice blocks.
Yeah. I've got a 16 millimeter with 12 of them in there, which is nice. But the other one that I use, especially when there's the game and I just want to be random, is I have a, 12 millimeter set, which is a block of 36.
Yeah.
And those are nice and small. The nice thing about that is when I'm playing a game, I got to roll two dice. I just grab a random two out of the pile and, you know, throw them in the dice tower. And, you end up, to me, again, dice are random. There's always a mystique about dice. So when I try to be totally random, especially like when I'm playing a solo game, I just don't use the same dice over. Okay, yeah. I've used these. Those go into the used pile until I've used everything, and then everything refreshes, and I keep going through. So I mean, that's another part of the mystique of dice. It's like my boy is a Broncos fan, so he's got some orange and blue ones.
Okay,
so whenever we play a game, he goes and pulls out his dice block, and he'll throw a couple of dice, and he'll settle on like two for the night. You know, those are the lucky ones for the night. I'm sure we all go through that. Some people have, you know, just that one set of dice. I was looking back at my collection and I started remembering I got a D20 in there that goes way, way back, and the edges on it are totally rounded off because I just rolled it and just kept rolling it and just playing it and playing it because that was the die. That was the master.
Yep.
So that's sort of the beautiful thing about today with all the choices out there is, like, again, modifying your game. Go find your dice. I want this sparkly dice. I want this, you know, red lava dice. Whatever you want to make your signature, you can go find it out there. That's just part of the wonderfulness of the hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's got some somewhere. Any other specific manufacturers that you happen to have a bunch from or particularly dig?
Well, as the games have changed, I think it's not necessarily manufacturers, but specialty dice have risen up in the collections. I was going back through and I didn't have any pictures posted online, but I've got more than a few Command and Colors games. And I was going back through my collection and I actually have an old Battle Lore, which is, it's still Commands and Colors. It's the old Battle Lore, like first edition version that has wooden dice that they actually had to send out a replacement set because the inking on the first ones was so horrible that just even the limited amount of handling would rub it off.
Wow.
But I still have my original set and I keep that to the side. You know, I keep that, and sometimes they're wood. They're not plastic. And it's just, it feels really nice. It's tactile when you roll it. It just really feels nice and wonderful. So the Rise of Specialty Dice, I looked across, like, okay, I've got how many different sets I have. I think I have one set of dice that came that you had to sticker. For Command and Colors, they just gave you some blank sixes, and you had to put the stickers on.
Yep.
Other games, I mean, that started me thinking, looking at what other games I have that have specialty dice. And that's sort of the beauty of today's manufacturing is that more designers can do that. Look at Academy Games; they have their special combat dice that have the flea result hits or a command decision, being able to do that with a game and just not have to say, okay, a one and a two is a hit, but a six is a flea, except if you're rolling for the continent, you forget that. Just roll the dice and they have the specialty dice for you. That's a lot more fun. I look at my games and go like, that's helped open up a lot of room for designers to go do something.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not having to cross-reference stuff through a variety of tables or anything, or just rely on same old to do stuff. So, Mike, what?
I know this is. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I know this is a wargaming-centric podcast, but I mean, I think some of the better examples of this, you actually go look at Fantasy Flight Games, how they've done their Star Wars dice for Legions or X-Wing or their role-playing game.
Yeah, the Genesis series them, dice.
Yeah, they're it's a D6, it's a D12, it's a D8, it's a D10, but then they put all those special symbols on them, and it totally changes how you look at and how you treat those dice. And in many ways, you start forgetting about, oh, I roll this, and I only have a 3 in 10 chance of getting what I want. But you forget that, because you're like, oh, yeah, these dice are better. There's a triumph on there. I can get that. It's just opened up so much game space.
You're never going to have a problem talking RPGs with me and Mike on the call.
Yeah, and I was going to say, when you chunk those dice you're talking about, usually you're tossing about 7 or 8, so you got to cipher through what you've rolled, and sometimes it can be challenging.
Yeah, it takes a second to work your way through there. Mike, any particular manufacturers, even if you've got your own giant brick of Chessex dice?
I do have several of those bricks of Chessex dice. I've got, of course, the Poundo dice bags, probably a couple of those. I mean, how can you not buy that, right?
You know, the Easy Roller Dice Company does the Poundo dice in the metal dice, so you get like 7. You know, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, no,
When I saw that on their website, like, you could get a pound of dice, and they were sold out of the regular pounds, but then they had pound of dice of like one of their metal sets of dice, and in the back of my mind I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, that's not going to be as many dice as it sounds like. Like, that sounds cool, I got a pound of metal dice, but it's gonna be like 9 dice, you know what I mean?
I was gonna say, I've got a pound of their dice too, but not the metal dice. No. I think I've got a couple of their sets. Chessex, I said, there's another company recently that I bought from, I think they're called Metallic Dice Games, and they sell metal, you know, they sell regular dice, but they also sell dice made out of crystals, like quartz and things like that. Wow. And they can get pretty darn expensive. They can get up to the, you know, the $100 level for their beautiful dice. I mean, I haven't bought any of the more expensive ones, but I have bought some of their, you know, their cheaper plastic ones that just, they look fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's my current favorite, I think. And they sell, you know, dice bags and little containers, little silicone cases for them and stuff. So worth checking out if you haven't been there. Of course, you'll end up buying something.
Of course. Like, that's the point.
And then, you know, we were talking earlier about the special dice I have, and I didn't mention your dice store that you like to promote, where I got my six-shooter dice.
Mike's talking about Black Oak Workshop. I won't say that I'm their number one fanboy, but I got to be pretty far up there because I love Craig's dice. It's the guy's name's Craig Zipsy, and he is like the most enthusiastic dude you will ever meet at a game convention. It's hilarious how much energy this guy has. I really think he just changes his batteries every night, puts a fresh set in, because he is just bouncing off the walls every time you see him. And he's great. He's great fun. I put in an order from Easy Roller Dice Company a couple of weeks ago. And totally for not the reasons anybody would be expecting, especially for this podcast. So a couple of years ago, I picked up one of their reversible felt dice bags, these big, it's felt, but it's two layers of thick felt, because again, it's reversible, and it's black on red dragon motif, holds probably about 100-150 regular size dice, and you can sort of fold down the sides, and it doubles almost as a dice tray when you're rolling, because the sides are kind of stiff at that point for when you're rolling it. And just a fantastic dice bag. Really love it a lot. Then my wife got a lens ball for her camera for Christmas, and suddenly my dice bag became her lens ball bag, because it was sturdy but soft and wasn't going to scratch the lens ball for the camera, which... For folks that don't know, a lens ball is just a spherical prism that, you know, you can get some really cool camera effects by, you know, focusing on the ball and letting it, you know, pull the light in from different directions or whatever the scenery is. And so you get some cool inverted effects in the middle of whatever landscape you're shooting. So I ended up, I finally grabbed the Easy Roller Dice Company website. And I told my wife, I was like, pick out the bag you want so I can have mine back.
And see, that could be a whole sub conversation. We could talk about dice bags and dice trays and dice towers that go with these dice.
No kidding. So yeah, I ended up ordering a dice bag from Easy Roller Dice Company for my wife to keep some of her photography stuff in. I'm glad I got my dice bag back, and she's got a really nice bag to keep that lens ball. So we had it featured, tried for each day, but there was like one or two days where I forgot, and I ended up having to play catch up the next day. But I did get one of Black Oak Workshop's Advent dice calendars this year, and starting the 1st of December, I shot pictures of each die as I opened it. And what they had was there were 7 full sets of RPG dice in there. So that was 21 of the 24 days. The other 3 days, they had some other stray special dice in there. But the 3 sets that you got were themed sets depending on which of the Advent calendar bought. And the one I got was the Curiosity Shop just because it kind of looked cool. I'm not sure they had that as many options in stock for me to get at that time anyway. The 3 dice sets, one of them is kind of a white crystal with a snowflake in place of the high number on the dice. One of them was blue with white inking, and there's a snowman in place of the high number on each of the dice. And then the last one is red with white inking, and it has a little reindeer nose and antlers in place of the high number on each of the dice. The D8 in that set has the names of the 8 reindeer on there instead of the numbers. I have no idea why you would need to roll a die with Santa's 8 reindeer names on it, but I could do it if I wanted to.
There's got to be an RPG out there that would. Yeah, you're trying to say the same thing I'm going to say. There's got to be an RPG out there where you could use those dice.
I wasn't going to say an RPG. I'm sure there's an ASL rule for that somewhere.
Probably. Well, so Mike has seen it at Origins, but remember there's the guys that had the minis game about the War for Christmas Village.
Yeah.
So there's probably the ability to like take pot shots at Santa's sleigh as it's flying through the sky, and you use that to specify which reindeer. the dice that came in between were all D6s that had engravings on them that were basically ribbons wrapped around them to make them look like presents, and kind of a bow on the 6 side to present. Look, if these are not any more or less functional than any other dice that I own. It was just kind of cool and fun, and you know, supporting a small business that got hammered by the pandemic this year because, you know, lost all those convention sales yet. But it was fun. It was kind of a cute, goofy sort of thing to do. And so, you know, if you got a gamer friend you need to get a Christmas gift for, an advent calendar full of dice is certainly a perfectly cool gimmick play, right?
Yeah, whoever thought of that was pretty smart move. I mean, you're trying to sell dice. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm actually where I'm sitting in my office. I still haven't taken this thing down from where I had set it up to be taking pictures over Christmas. It's still sitting across the room from me. I'm sitting here staring at it with the piles of dice in front of me.
Certainly beats the way I built my collection at first, which was raiding my parents' game shelf of Yahtzee and everything, so just so I could have some extra dice. It's a much better way. Yahtzee and Risk. You know, raid them, and you know, my parents go, you know, try to play a game. They couldn't because I had all the dice somewhere else.
When I was first starting out role-playing in the early 80s, one of the games that my dad had on the shelf, you talk about, you know, raiding the parents' stash for some dice. One of the games that my dad had on the shelf was an old, like, Avalon Hill, maybe it was Avalon Hill, I don't remember for sure, college football game with, you know, all sorts of charts and everything of, you know, these guys have a great rushing offense and these guys have a great passing offense and whatever. And there were 6-sided dice in there. One of them was numbered 1 to 3 twice. One of them was numbered, you know, 1s and 2s. There were 2 each, and then a 3 and a 4 or whatever. But they were oddly numbered, specific for this football game. And so, you know, because D&D had funny dice, and because I'm in 4th grade and I just think all funny dice are just different funny dice. Like, I snagged these dice out of this game that my dad had and used those to just sort of wing it as we were just making up results on the fly playing role-playing games anyway, until I could get my own polyhedral dice. But my dad was like, I need these back because they are the only dice that work for this football game. And it's not like you could swap in Risk dice for Yahtzee dice or something. You know, they were very specific custom D6s, but they became my game dice for about 6 months there. Just because they were different.
So speaking of the early days, BB Mike, how many dice did you ink when you were younger?
I did ink a lot, not a lot, but I'm going to say it was Dungeons and Dragons. And I wish I had my dice with me now because I know there's at least, then this shows you how dumb I was, dumber back then than I am now, if you can believe that. But it was 1d20. It came with Dungeons and Dragons. And instead of inking it, I actually painted half of it with paint. So you can imagine what that did to the statistics when you rolled the thing. But yeah, I have inked dice, if that's the question. So
some of the people listening today probably don't even know what that is. And those were
probably not.
Here we
probably
are.
Not.
Here we are doing that grognard thing again. Of those were the days.
Well, I mean, yeah. The technology hadn't come around that where you could actually, you know, 0 through 9 was all you could print on a die. So
I actually have a set of even Zaki's game science dice, some of the early ones, you could choose inked or uninked.
Yeah. Huh.
So it was a cost difference, but you could get uninked ones and then do it yourself. Sit there and try to rub the ink in and rub it off and everything.
So, yeah, I can recall one. So my first of the Errol Otis Red Box basic D&D sets had the old polyhedral dice with the goofy white crayon in there. And I can remember hitting those with the crayon and trying to, you know, rub off the excess and everything. Once we moved to Europe, one of the things that was, I don't know if it was more prevalent in Europe or just I happened to go to those stores more when I was in Europe, where I had a little more freedom, you know, getting a little older and traveling outside the house and not having to have mom and dad take you to the mall or something, that there were some of the stationery stores over there had some very good, permanent, super fine line pens that I picked up a couple of black permanent markers with like 0.3 millimeter tips or whatever, like, or you know, just these super fine markers that I have a handful of them that I inked with those kinds of precision markers. I've got a couple of D20s in here that I inked with those. I happened to be able to get a hold of those kinds of pens and they looked really good getting in the numbers on those D20s somewhere. So Zaki at one point was publishing the Twerps series of games that Jeff and his wife, Jeff D and wife is Amanda, Jeff and Amanda, had put together. And the Twerps games are some of the goofiest, you know, cheesy beer and pretzels kind of fun, generic role-playing games out there. They each came with these little itty-bitty D20s. And I want to say they're maybe 11 millimeter D20s. And yes, they really are that tiny. But I was able to ink in one of those with one of these pens somewhere along the way, which is insanely tiny, kind of cool.
And what's interesting, too, the ones that I have where I did ink them in, it's like Ian said, those are the ones that used to be like the D20. Now it's more like a marble. It's been used so much.
Yeah.
You know, I need to probably mount it and display it somewhere just to retire it.
I had a friend of mine that used to joke that once you had rolled a die that often like that, that it was a D1. It was essentially a one-sided die, and you just sort of hoped it managed to come to a rest with a single number facing up. So that's just sort of what you hoped for. But we... you know, some of the more oddball dice, you had mentioned like the Fantasy Flight series ones, Commands and Colors and the Birth of America series have some custom dice in them for mechanics. I've got a copy of Fantasy Flight's Runebound game that uses dice as a movement mechanic where this is a little different. You know, look, a lot of Americans grow up playing, you know, Sorry or Yahtzee or whatever, not Yahtzee, Monopoly, where you roll dice to tell you how far you're going to move. What was cool about Runebound's dice, use them for movement, but you roll 5 dice each turn unless there's a penalty and you're only rolling 4. You roll that number of dice and the dice all have symbols on them for specific terrain. Based on the dice you roll, that's the terrain you're allowed to move through. So if you're trying to get from point A to point B and you roll the dice, you've got to kind of figure out, okay, do I have the right terrain symbols to get all 5 hexes away? or do I have to go by a more circuitous route because that's what I happen to roll this turn? And so that was an interesting twist on a randomizer mechanic that, you know, still puts some random effect into things, but not so much so that the player loses all control of what they're trying to do. I thought that was kind of a neat mechanic that they were able to use in there. And then, Mike, you may have seen it at Origins, the Ninja Dice game. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. It's it comes in a little black foam cube with a zipper top, but it's like a little ninja head with the white eyes on it. The Ninja Dice game is a bit of a press your luck game where you're rolling to try and get a certain number of results and re-rolls without busting, basically. One of the cool things about this one is one of the dice is a line that sets on the table when you roll the dice, where that die lands and where that line extends across the table determines the status of all of the other dice that you rolled with it. So it's not just what's on the face of the dice, but the spatial relationship between the dice that matters when you're trying to what the result of the roll was. I thought that was kind of
interesting.
Yeah.
Now you're making me pull out my set of ninja dice.
Oh, so you got it.
I have it. I need to go back and reread these rules and learn again.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier, you were talking about stealing dice from other games to supplement your collection. It kind of dawned on me in thinking about this podcast. You know, I've got, like you said, Brent, you know, you've got yours in a fishbowl or whatever. You got these dice in bags or something somewhere. But it dawned on me, you know, if I went and took all the dice out of the games that I have and put those out with the dice that are already on display, how many more dice would I have? And I think it almost double inside the collection. Because think about all the dice in the boxes that you have, the games you have.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, that would
even
hurt.
Even recently, was it Kevin Bertram? With his Shores of Tripoli,
yep.
There's a whole bunch of yellow dice in that one. But you never use that many. And then I think I read on the forum, you know, they asked him, you know, why? Somebody was saying, am I missing a rule here? You know, why is it? He goes, no, they just really look cool and I could add them to the game, so I did.
Yeah.
So if you ever need yellow dice, yellow D6, Shores of Tripoli.
The game comes with like eight red. Is it 8 or 10 of each color? Whatever it is,
it's 10.
It may be 10 of each color. And so you've got like 10 blue ones because you need a bunch of them for the U.S. And you've got like 10 red ones because you need a whole bunch of them for the Tripolitan states, right, for the Barbary mm-hmm. Pirates. And yep. Then at most, you're going to need 2 for the Swedes. But they put right. 10 yellow dice in there, just like everything else. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I opened it up, I'm like, holy crap, that's a lot of yellow dice. Like, there's only 2 Swedish boats in here. What the hell? Mm-hmm. But you're right. You've got plenty of yellow dice. You could go raid for something else. Looking at the fishbowl that I've got on the table right now, it's a mixture of a bunch of dice from different places. I mentioned Black Oak Workshop. One of the things I really like about Black Oak's dice is that a lot of them are a little about D6s, I want to say, are teeter. And so they're a little bigger, which gives you a little nicer effect, the look and feel of them. They feel a little better in the hand, but they also, the typography and some of the symbolic. I first stumbled across Black Oak Workshop through a Kickstarter that Craig was running. He was doing these bullseye dice, which are kind of it functionally makes no difference, but like everything else with dice, it's kind of a cool effect. And what he had were these D6s, and he was advertising with like a Robin Hood. He has D6s with a bullseye on there, and the number of arrows sticking into the bullseye is what you roll. And so there's, you know, from 1 to 6. And then he also, as a stretch goal, ended up offering some well. And so I got one of each color in the sixes, and I got 2 or 3. And then later, he's also released D4s and D6s with daggers instead of arrows. And that was sort of how Craig got his start with those, and where I first found Kickstarter. I was like, here's $10. Send me some cool dice. And now I'm being overrun with stuff like Oak. And so Mike mentioned the six shooter dice. It's great for a Western themed game. It's the revolver. It's the where you put the rounds in the revolver, and the number of bullets in the revolver sphere there is what you rolled.
And I bought those from him, and I bought it was a really cool Pony Express dice bag to go with it. Awesome! It just so if I had the Western dice, the six shooter in that bag, and I buy it, and he goes, well, here, take a couple of these whiskey jug dice to go play through Western game. So he gave me a couple of free whiskey jugs with like the X's on the jugs tells you what you roll. So it's pretty cool.
Which again, functionally, no real difference to anything else.
of course not.
But thematically, that's a great, fun little touch. One of the fun dice that he's got that I really like is the Disappearing Knight. So the Black Knight from Monty Python.
That thing is awesome, yeah.
as the numbers get smaller from six down to one, he loses an arm and a leg and another arm and another leg. You know, it's just
He's not quite dead yet though.
Yeah. Nope. He's gonna bleed on you though. There was a set of dice that not a set, I bought three of the same thing that I stumbled across when one of our local game stores here was unfortunately forced out of business as a result of the pandemic. This was a store that didn't have a strong budget. Even worse, they made a lot of their money in store play. They would rent. They had two small there that they had a couple of tables set up in different places in the store. They paid a reserve and have some rental there. So even though they were eventually allowed to have foot traffic in the stores to be able to sell product, these guys had built a lot of their business model around renting space in the store for game groups, and all that rental evaporated, and it was unfortunate that the store had ended up going under. But once they were able to reopen, when they were still doing sales, I was trying to buy some stuff from them just to help the business, and so I picked up a 13th Age rule book. I managed to find the old James Bond role playing manual there, and I'm not going to tease you. I'll tell you how cheap I got it.
It's not my original edition, so don't worry.
Up on the counter, you know, they had the giant dice display, and they had these granite-looking D12s that were numbered 1 to 4 in Roman numerals. I have absolutely no use for these. I didn't care. They look cool. I bought three of them. Just because they look cool, right? That's kind of different. Exactly. That's something I didn't already have. Like, the D8s that I have that are pipped D8s, when I bought those in Germany in the early 80s, the only D8s you ever found had, you know, Arabic numerals on them. I found some D8s that were pipped. I thought, those are cool. Nobody else has those. I'm getting some of those. I still have them. I got like four of them. They're still here.
That's how we buy these, though. It's like when I was at Origins and I saw the little mini dice, and it was a set of RPG dice. They're like 10 millimeter mini in a tube. I'll never use this, but I've got to have that. That's cool. It's just so cool.
Dude, I bought mine at Origins in 2005, and I still have them, and they're still in the tube.
Exactly. But they're cool.
Exactly. If I ever need a miniature set of dice to take camping, that's the ones to pack.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're virtually no weight. That's exactly what it is. Ian, you were saying?
That's exactly what it is. You know, we were talking bags there just for a moment. I have a little tiny mouse bag. Back when mice, you know, still needed a little bag. That's my travel bag. I have one set of, a set of seven polyhedrals that go in there, and it travels. They're super lightweight. I just throw it in the bag. It goes with me. I always have some dice. Because when it comes down to it, I mean, I know there's dice rollers out there, you know, apps and everything. But at the end of the day, nothing beats, you know, jiggling that little piece of plastic in your hand and throwing it out and watching it roll across the table. There's no app out there that can do that for you.
No. Nope. And so I'll admit that I also have this little, it's a little book bag that I usually grab and go whenever I'm going somewhere. And yeah, I have dice in there. For that reason.
my work bag for several years. So I got a nice canvas, a nice long narrow canvas pencil pouch somewhere along the way from some fancy pen set that I bought somewhere along the way or something, and that became the dice pouch that I kept, in part because I could keep a couple of mechanical pencils in there for character sheets and stuff. There's three or four of the D&D minis, the pre-painted D&D minis, the collectible ones that are in there that I would use for characters. And there's probably 15 or 20 dice in there, a whole bunch of D20s and a bunch of other stuff that stayed in my work bag for the better part of 5 years because I worked with a whole bunch of gamers. And on any given day, there was, you know, a 50-50 chance of a D&D game breaking out at lunchtime. And so that way I always had my dice with me. And and it was funny because I think I was in my third semester of teaching when I was teaching community college here, taking a break from the IT business for a little while. When I was cleaning out my bag one time, I was like, why am I still schlepping these dice? Like, I haven't worked with any of those dudes that I would game with over lunchtimes in 2 years because I've been teaching college. Like, why am I still carrying? So the dice bag finally came out of the work bag at that point. It doesn't mean all the dice are out. I still have a couple of dice that I keep in my work bag, but the big bag of dice did finally come out. I hear you. I just grabbed one of the little trays. I've got these little bead boxes that I picked up at the at Michael's or something. I don't know, $1.50 each. And this is the one that's got all my dice from the conventions in it. And so I've got all of the Origins dice from 05 to 2020 through and I'm missing one. I think I'm missing 2013 that I'm missing in there. No, I've got a 2013. Maybe it's 2012. I'm missing one of them somewhere. But the 2020 dice, like Origins didn't happen in 2020, except that the dice folks had already made all the commemorative dice. Mike, you know the ones we're talking about, right? You
take I have two of the 2020 ones, yeah.
Yeah, you take the coupon book and you go over and you redeem them at the booth. Well, they'd already made all the dice, so they offered them for sale online. They're like, hey, look, if you want the 2020 dice, they're a buck each or whatever it was, plus the shipping. Yep. So I'm like, all right, send me a couple. And yeah. So I ordered some for me, and I got one for my son because my son, Mike's met my son. The coupon books become my son's primary occupation at Origins. It's this massive.
Oh, he's very good at it. He's very good at it too.
Yes, yes, he is. I've got like 8 D&D tote bags thanks to my son. but I had to order him some of the Origins dice because he would kill me if I'd gotten some for me and didn't get him one. I've also got a die from the Mace convention here in the Carolinas. This is the 10th anniversary Mace die. This year will be their 25th anniversary. So that tells you how long I've had that one. I've got a couple of them that are engraved for my buddy Dan has a blog. It's the giantbattlingrobots.com. And what is it? Yeah, I'm trying to read on here. It's giantbattlingrobots.blogspot.com that he had a bunch of dice made with his blog engraved on them that he gave out to everybody at Origins that year. It was instead of business cards, he was giving out dice. look, that's a perfectly cool trick. And you're just going to go to his website anyway if you need anything from him. And then I've got my 6 D6s that have the bayonet from the old Bayonet Games logo engraved on there that I had done at my very first Origins.
I know that both Ian and myself, and a lot of the people listening to this podcast, are eagerly awaiting the Armchair Dragoons dice to come out at some point. Yes.
So
no pressure.
No. but see, what Ian doesn't know that Mike does is I've actually had some conversations with a dice manufacturer about these, and we are working on trying to synchronize when their next big order will be done. They'll get some dice made. And what we're hoping for is that while they are clearly Dragoons branded dice, they are not so Dragoons specific that these guys can't also just sell them as general D6s for people that want something that's vaguely Western or military themed also. So,
or Napoleonic.
Yeah. Or Napoleonic. And so we're efforting that as we speak. we are working on getting some Dragoon dice done. One of the other things that Mike has heard me talk about plenty.
I wasn't going to bring that up. I'm totally bringing it up. Secret until it actually comes out of hiding one day.
Well, I'm hoping eventually we can actually pull this off. One of my dreams for our booth at Origins for years has been I want a gumball machine at the booth that is full of dice. Put your 25 cents in there, crank the lever, you get a die spit out, or 25, 50 cents, whatever we end up setting it for. Not because anybody needs dice out of a gumball machine, but because there'll be a line around the block for people that want dice out of a machine.
And I would be in that line.
It's such a goofy-ass gimmick. Like, there's no reason not to do it. So, I totally want the dice gumball machine. And it will have a whole bunch of those Dragoons D6s in there along with whatever else we can manage to put in there.
And you'll probably sell out.
Honestly, my dream state would be that we have to refill it a couple of times over the, if we get to that point, it will be an unqualified success. And again, not that anybody needs dice out of a gumball machine, but that's not the point. Like, we've spent, most of an hour talking about all the dice we have, none of which we need.
If you want the gumball machine to sell out, all you have to do is get Ian to put one of those Starfleet Battles die in there, just one. And I will sit there and feed quarters into it until it empties out.
Far more quarters than you would have needed had you simply added them all up and just went over to the Amarillo Design Bureau, booth and just bought a set, you know?
Yeah, probably. I can probably have those made nowadays. You know, it's like you go to any of the sites that make game components, I could probably have them made.
Probably.
I should probably just do that.
One of the things that I do miss at Origins, and I understand it was cost prohibitive for them to do this, the Chessex guys used to have the giant crate of dice that you could just get a scoop of dice in there. And look, this was all the seconds. These are the ugly dice. These are the ones that may not roll perfect, or the ones they just had way too damn many of, the ones that are like, you know, purple and green and look like they escaped from a Mardi Gras float. And you can barely read them because they're purple and green and inked in black. And they're, but just the cool factor of, hey, I'm going to buy that $10 mug from you and go get my scoop of dice. I didn't need a mug full of dice. And the mug is perfectly functional for chit pull games. You know, when I need to pull activation chits, that it's perfectly functional for that. With the cool little Chaos logo on there and everything. It's great. Works awesome for that. I didn't need a mug full of dice. I still bought a mug full of dice. And not only can you get the mug full of dice, they used to. So the mug of dice, like the mug was $10 and it was $5 per scoot or something like that. Like, I don't remember the exact, but they also had a pitcher, like the beer pitchers that you get at the bar. You get a pitcher of dice for like $25. You, Mike, you know, you'd have been scooping pitchers of dice.
Exactly.
I'd be scooping pitchers, but I'm not sure I'd be doing dice.
I don't know what it is when you go to a convention, though. It's like, you know, now, you know, it, well, when we used to go to Origins, I should say. But, yeah. You know, you go to Origins now, it's like, I'm just going to get the free one they give out, and that's it. I don't need any more dice. But you always walk away with dice.
Yeah.
You always end up buying dice at a convention.
yeah, absolutely. The first time Metal Dog joined us at Origins, we were walking around the exhibit hall just checking it out, and we got over to the Catalyst Games the Catalyst Game Labs booth, where they had the branded dice for all of the houses, for all the BattleTech houses. And then next to that, they had the branded dice for all of the clans. And you know, you can't just buy your favorite house. Like, you need one of everything. You need the complete set. And Metal Dog's eyeing him, and he's looking at him, and he's kind of, I can see the gears turning in his head. He's like, I could get all the clans, or I could get all the houses. Don't know that I could do both. And you could tell he was trying to figure out if he could pull it off. And I think he ended up actually buying some stuff from Easier instead. But
that was the compromise.
Yeah. It's like, well, I can't get all of those, so I'm just going to go buy some dice from somebody else. But he still bought some dice. He's still left with dice. Again,
how
not dice
you
that you need. Not dice that you need, just dice that went ahead and got it.
No, I bought, there was it was probably three or four dice, different dice vendors at Origins, but one of them had this big golf ball size metal D20 that probably weighed 2 pounds. And I picked it up and I was like, who would use this? What would you use it for? And I walked out with it because it was just so cool looking.
they use it to entice people to spend money at their booth.
It works.
In that dice bag that I used to keep in my work bag, one of the dice that I have in there is a steel 20, and it came in one of the when third edition stuff was all OGL and lots of people were making expansions for stuff. Monty Cook had his Iron Kingdoms series of games, and as an adjunct to that, they had all these little accessory boxes. They were these little metal boxes that were about twice the size of an Altoids box that they would sell different tokens and counters and such in them. And one of them had a bunch of monster tokens and NPC tokens and some status tokens, but it also came with a steel D20. And I totally bought that just for the steel D20. I have no idea where the rest of the box is with any of the stuff that was in it, but that D20 has been in that dice bag of mine forever. And that D20 got to be sort of locally famous amongst our game group here because it was the Streakbuster die. Like, if you had a consistent set of rolls that were just absolute crap, you could go to the well and go grab the Streakbuster. You wouldn't use it more than once, you know, a night, maybe twice if it was a long session. And it wasn't one of those dice that was like always rolling 20s. It always had this sort of mystical quality that if you needed an 11, it would roll a 13, right? Whatever you needed, it would roll just enough to break that streak of bad rolls for you. And then you had to put it away. Like, you couldn't go to the well too many times or it wasn't going to work for you. So, you know, Ian, you talked about getting superstitious with some dice, right? These aren't rolling real well. Put those to the side. Give me some better ones. Exactly. That steel D20 was a great streak buster, exactly, something like that.
And that's part of the wonderfulness of dice, is they become like a little talisman for you when you play. There is that mystique about them. And that's just, it's another part of what makes games so enjoyable, is that, yeah, people sit there, oh, they're too random. No, that's, they got that mystique. And I'm going to sit there, I'm going to blow on them, I'm going to shake them about, you know, pray to the dice lords, yep, and roll them out and see what happens. And when it rolls well, you know, great. When it doesn't roll well, you still take it, because that's just where the dice rolled.
Yep, yep, absolutely.
And so another question I have is there something that you guys prefer? Is there a particular die that you prefer in war games? Like, do you prefer D6s, or would you rather use D10s, or does it even matter? I'm seeing a lot of D10s in war games lately. I don't know why. If that's like the new thing, or it's just different, or what's going on.
So I have a bit of a story to tell behind that one, but I'll let Ian go first on this.
So I think the D10s come out because I don't want to accuse designers of being lazy, but I think in some ways they're being lazy. In that a D10 is easy. When you're trying to figure out, what are my odds? How do I, am I modeling this, doing that? D10s, you can play around with some more modifiers because you have a wider range. So maybe you can play around with as a designer, you're like, oh, I want to throw this modifier and that modifier in. But if you do that on a D6, if you're stuck with one D6, any modifier becomes very sensitive. 2D6, it's still, modifiers can be very sensitive. So you asked, which one do I prefer? I think being the old school type of guy, I understand, I taught myself, I learned, you know, what the odds are on all the different roles. So for me, to pick up a 2D6, I look at it, I'm looking at the odds, I'm looking at the tables, and I'm going like, yeah, okay, I know where I need to be, and I know, yeah, what I need to do. So that's a comfort level. I think that's part of why D20s were so popular for RPGs in many ways, because the D20s, everything's 5%. So, I mean, it's very easy to figure out what are your odds, and very easy for a GM on the fly going like, you're better than half, so you'll roll a 13 or higher, you know, or 13 or less, you know, you can figure it out, make it happen.
Yeah.
I tend to like D20s in RPG environments, just because exactly what you just mentioned, Ian. It's very easy to figure out as you go. The 5% increments are very clean as you're doing the math. I grew up on, you know, like single D6 die rolls, and then occasionally the 2D6 die roll, depending on the game. I've never been a fan of percentage dice in war games because the level of granularity just seemed like overkill. If your game design requires that it has to be a 72% roll, that it's that level of granular that you can't just round it to 70 and just roll one D10 and, you know, beat a 7 or 7 or less or whatever, then I think you've missed an opportunity for some simplification and elegance in your game design. That's my personal opinion on those things. I'm fine with 10s or 6s in war games. Again, 10s, I think, give you a little wider spread, but the math works better in people's heads, especially these days. But it's, I think part of it is sort of, what's that effect you're going for. The little bit of the war story here. So, Mike, you can make fun of me for how long Orange Crush has been on the drawing board. That's fine. but many, many moons ago, back when Pete Bogdazarian used to still come to Origins, that tells you how long ago it's been. Pete was sitting down looking over Orange Crush with me, and it was a very early draft of the game. Again, tells you how long ago this was. And I was doing a lot of D6 stuff, and I was really unhappy with the way the combat odds were kind of working themselves out, where you had die roll plus your attack strength versus defender with whatever terrain or support modifiers they had, and there were times where it just felt too much like a foregone conclusion before the dice were even rolled. Pete was kind of looking over it, and he finally asked, he said, have you ever considered swapping out of D6s to maybe look at a D8 or 10? And so we actually played most of one of the scenarios using D10s for the combat rolls instead of the sixes. And it worked so much better. It was just one of those light bulb moments, those aha moments, that suddenly the combat system all really fell into place with that slightly wider spread of options available during the battle. They were far less foregone conclusions at that point. And I was very happy that Pete made that suggestion for the game. Not that anybody else has seen it. Like, I get that. but I was very happy that Pete put that suggestion in there, and it did make for a much better game. Most of the other games that I've done design work on have been primarily D6 focused. A little bit of it is kind of personal inertia. Ian, you mentioned growing up, like, you rated all the Yahtzee games and Risk games for the dice because that's what was in the house. And polyhedrals weren't something you could just find on every street corner. And so a lot of my design ideas were shaped by that early availability that I did a lot of stuff with D6s because I didn't want to put an undue burden on the players to have to go round up all sorts of weird dice. And I've just sort of, you know, when I was putting together the original Bayonet Games Warfighter series, it was all D6s. You know, even numbers are hits, sixes count double. And so you had a 50% shot of a 50% chance of not getting a hit, a 33% chance of getting a hit, and a 16% chance of getting a double hit. And it worked. You know, it scaled well enough within the context of the game that it worked, and it game kept flowing, and it was fun. So, yeah. So that in that case, that worked for me.
And I would be surprised that I think if you ask that question, I think most older wargamers, I think, would probably agree with the D6 consensus. That's the comfort level is there, and it's just statistically it's easier to deal with. Yeah.
I actually threw a poll up on our Twitter feed just asking people. Now, unfortunately, with Twitter, you only have so many options to work with. And so I asked folks, I said, you know, all right, no context, which dice do you prefer? 1D6, 2D6, 1D10, or there was an option for other, and tell us about it in the comments. And I honestly don't remember what won. I'm going to look right now as as we are recording, because I don't remember who won.
And that would be, that'd be interesting to
scroll back through it. Oh, look, it's a Twitter poll, right? It's the least scientific possible thing you could do. 32.7% went 2D6 out of 55 votes.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Still, it was fun. It was goofy. It was, you know, why not? Somebody threw in their D12. Somebody said, so we're going to pretend like 100-sided die are not a thing. Well, no, it's not that we're going to pretend that. I only got so many options in the Twitter poll I can use. Somebody said 100D6. No, it was interesting just to see. But the thing is, like, there was no runaway winner. 2D6 was 32 and change. D6 was 29 and change. D10 was 23 and change. It's not like there was a runaway winner there.
Yeah.
Mike, you're one of the guys I know that is a big fan of the Dungeon Crawl Classics RPGs. You know, talk about some oddball dice.
The dice chain. Yeah. Actually, and I like Dungeon Crawl Classics for that reason, because you do have the dice chain where you start off with a D. I think it's a D3. I don't know if it goes down to D2 or not. I have to go grab a set of them and look, but it goes from a D3 up to a D20 something or other.
Yeah, but they've got like fives and sevens and nines.
Yeah,
and 13s.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And they sell the dice, of course. That's probably why they do it. But it's just, you know, and as you level up, you know, you select the next higher die, or sometimes you get a bonus that lets you throw a higher die with the one you're using for your skill. So it's kind of neat. I like that.
Yeah, the five-sided dice. Okay, sure.
And it's, I like the three-sided, the D3. I mean, because you can't roll a D6 and divide by two, you've got the D3.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks like a throat lozenge, too. That's the crazy thing.
It really does.
Looks like something you got at a candy store. So, hey, Ian, have you played with any of those just oddball, weird, off-the-wall dice, you know, dice styles like that?
I've been trying to think. So I was looking here. I got a game on the shelf here. An old
brand. We can look at his dice games online here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm looking at the ones that are in there. I think the one of the I would have an old football game here that's got a, you know, battle ball or something like that. And it has all the different dice in there. So the running backs do the D12s, and the linemen only roll like a D2 or D3 or something like that when you're doing movement and stuff like that. All the different dice give you different ways you can put it together to portray whatever you're trying to do. That was one of the more fun ones with all the different dice thrown in. Trying to think of some other specialty dice games that I got. I just picked up a snowman dice from Brain Games, which is a total kids little dexterity fun game where you roll the dice and try to build a snowman. It's D6s, but you got the bottom, middle, the head of the snowman. You have a snowflake for a wild card, and the best one is you have a snowball, which is then you flick it at the other players to try to knock their snowman down. It's total fun. It's just a riot to play with little kids.
So it's the equivalent of throwing a snowball at them. That's clever.
Yes, it's totally clever. And hats off to them. It's a fun little game. I played it with the first grader, and it was just a riot. You flick the snowball. If it goes off the table, you have to go get it all the time while you're trying to build your snowman and push it to the North Pole. It's a riot. This goes to show that you know, taking the simple D6 and just, you know, retheming it a little bit, you can do a lot with it. I mean, just the classic D6, little six sided cube there. Lots of good stuff to do with it.
Yeah, you're talking about some of the other stuff you can do with the dice in that tray where I've got my Origins dice and my pipped D8s and my custom Bayonet Games dice. I have a tube in here. It is the Adventure dice, and I'm curious. It's from Flying Buffalo, and God knows how old these things are. There's a weather die with random weather symbols on it. I'm pulling the little paper insert out so I can see what it says here. There's the weather die, the treasure die, the corridor die, magic items. What else is there? I'm missing something because there's five of these things. Weather, treasure, corridor. I guess there's several corridor dice. There's a door one that tells you whether it's locked or open or magically locked. And then that's the treasure one. So there's multiple corridor dice. Oh, there's one with traps. There's a trap die. So
they just took a table and put it onto a dice and sold it to you, and you bought it.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. I have no idea when I bought this thing. I've had this thing for so damn long. I have no idea when I got these. When one of the ones this summer when I was picking up some different RPG things from Amazon, one of the things that I picked up, there's a manufacturer out there. They've got several of these things. They are Dungeon Geomorphs. As oversized dice, they're like inch and a half dice with a dungeon layout on the six dice or the five dice. And so you roll the five dice and you piece them together. They're all geomorphics. So they all fit together. And there's an instant little mini dungeon crawl for you. The ones that I got are actually the village and town dice. And so you roll the five dice, and one of them is six different sides that all are basically the town square. So you get a different little town square each time. There's one that's mostly farms and one that's mostly something else. And so you roll these dice and you sort of shove them together, and there's your little village layout. And why not? What the heck? I mean, I know you get a lot more of this kind of creativity with these oddball things in sort of role-playing and adventure gaming more than gaming. But still, it's a cool use of the dice.
But we're seeing, I think, more than in wargaming, like we talked about earlier. I think you're starting to see some of that kind of creep into the war games. Maybe we'll see more of it. Who knows?
Ian mentioned several games that use those. The Commands and Colors. And
exactly, yeah.
What else was there, Ian? Birth of America series?
Birth of America. I mean, heck, even, let's see, the new Conflict of Heroes has that special spent die. It's a 10-sided die, but it only goes like 1 through 7 with the different series. Heck, even Root, because Root's a war game, right? Root has that special combat dice with D12, but it's only 0 to 3 on it. There's so much more fun that can be done. I think, looking up here, I got Agents of Mayhem, Pride of Babylon from Academy Games. That has some really fancy special dice in it for all the different superhero type movements and stuff in there and combats. I think we've come a lot. We talk about it. We're comfortable with the D6. At least I'm comfortable with the D6, but it's also really fun to see these days the designers take dice and push them in different ways and just really explore more what you can do with the dice. A D12, okay, you know what the odds are of it landing on that side. But you know, putting that into a game and figuring out how it works, that's a lot more fun.
Yep. Hey, look, we've been going, you know, well over an hour here just talking about all kinds of different dice that we've had over the years. We haven't even talked about things like the customizable dice games.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like the Deep Throwing Space Stones 6. Game. There's, yeah, there Deep, there was, which one, Mike?
Deep Space 6. There's Nations, the dice game.
There's also the old Dragon Dice that TSR did that. You know, they ordered way too many of them, got stuck with way too much. And nobody could read the damn things anyway because the symbols were so horribly abstract. There was the Throwing Stones character dice game where the different kinds of dice that you collected into your air quote character sheet, you know, were the different abilities that your character had. And so as you leveled up, you could add different dice. Those, you know, there were all kinds of these different sorts of collectible dice games out there that, man, it's just, there was, I remember... In the mid-90s, there was the Dice Land game, that these were D8s that were giant D8s, but they were they shipped you as a flat pack, and you had to, like, you know, punch them out and fold them together and everything. But the D8s, each one of the sides, the reason they were so big is they were printed with specific outcomes. Roll these things, then you had, like, almost a paragraph of text you had to read, depending on which face was up that said, here's what's going on.
Well, there's even in the RPG world, you can buy story dice where there's not text on the dice, but there's pictures, and you chuck a handful of D6s basically, but the pictures are supposed to inspire you to come up with, you know, something of whatever you roll. That's going to be your narrative or your, for the RPG.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of stuff we haven't talked about.
So those are actually educational dice.
The story cubes. Yeah.
Those are actually educational story dice, story cubes, which are wonderful for RPGs. You're exactly right. I use them sometimes just to, you know, the boys say, hey, let's do something real quick, a quick pickup game. And I'm like, okay, let's see. Throw a couple of dice down and go, okay, your spaceship, you found a treasure map with the spaceship, and you got to go find the gem of, you know, of wonderfulness, and let's go. You can just use it to that little quick little start inspiration.
My daughter got some of those story cubes as the prize in a kid's meal at a fast food place one time.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That was her thing in there. So look, if we started to delve into every possible RPG version of this, we would be here all night long, but at some point we got to unplug, and not just because the Hurricanes are in the third period. I'd like to go watch the end of the game. just a little bit of alternate motivation there, you know, just looking at some of the other dice I've got here. I've got some D8s that are compass dice, north, south, east, west, and then northeast, southeast, you know, as the eight sides. So if I ever needed to scatter stuff in eight directions, I could do that. For some reason, I have two of those. Not really sure why I have two of those.
I think they came like that because I have the same ones you're talking about. And I have two for
some
reason.
Did they come in a two-pack?
Must have, because I've got two of them, and I don't know why.
Right. Maybe so.
And I think the weather dice that I ordered are coming. I think there's two of those.
Yeah, it could be. You probably ordered two just in case you ever got around to losing one. You know, always had a backup. No?
Is that where you can't get lost?
Well, you know, maybe so. I do work for the FAA, so maybe we believe in backup systems.
There you go. Redundancy.
There you go.
So, Ian, any famous last words on dice here?
Just may all your dice roll right.
There you go. Mike?
I would just say keep on buying them, but I know you're going to do that anyway, so I don't have to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. No reason to stop buying dice at all. Audience, we hope you have enjoyed this trek through Dice Land with us. One of the things we, you know, bit of business we do have to do on the way out of here. Those of you that have heard a couple of these episodes already know that we do have a Patreon that has now started. It's patreon.com/armchairdragoons. And so if you go take a look, you know, you could throw whatever kind of support you feel the need to throw towards us in helping us out there with staying on the air and on the web. But one of the things that we did note in all of that with the Armchair Dragoons is that folks that support us at the $10 a month level and above get a by name shout out on our podcast here. And so we want to make sure that we fulfill our contractual obligations, but more importantly, that we recognize those that are supporting us at that
at that different level. And so Patrick Garrity and Kevin Bertram are both still $10 a month supporters with us. And we love you guys. We appreciate the hell out of y'all being a part of the Dragoons here and joining us and helping out. We've added another person at that level now. Treb Curry is now also one of those supporters at that level with us.
Yay.
And,
exactly.
And so
awesome.
Thank you very much, Treb. the different levels that we have, so the base level is the regimental recruit. That is the minimum level that we've got. In the middle tier, we have a regimental supporter, and the regimental patrons are the higher end folks. And the other thing is those $5 and $10 a month ones, we've capped those at a certain level. Like at a certain point, that we're going to close membership at that level. So if it's something you're interested in, hop in there and join us. One of the other things that we do is if you're at the $5 and $10 a month level, we do a monthly live stream where we just kind of flip on the cameras and just have a conversation. And so this past weekend, we did one of those, and Dana Lombardi joined us. He's one of our patrons, and so it was really cool just telling some war stories with Dana Lombardi, having some conversations about some of the game designs they've done over the years. It's not that Dana was a special guest. He was just a supporter. So, and Ian was there for that one as well. So that was very cool. The other thing that the $10 a month thing gets you as well is it also, not only are we going to embarrass you by mentioning you on our podcast, but that also you get early registration for any live events that we're doing. So like we do our summer ACDC again, coming up in June, you've got those higher end Patreon supporters for us. Get first crack at registering for the convention and for the events. And so that's kind of cool for those folks as well. So with all of that, we want to say thank you, audience, for joining us for this this rambling romp through Dice Land. And thank you for being here as a part of that. We appreciate you taking the time to sit down and listen to us talk dice. Mike has threatened to open a thread of random dice photographs in our forum. So if you want to participate, pop in and say hi and, you know, share some pictures of some of your favorites and some of your oddballs and off the walls. You know, maybe even some of the dice you hate if you've still got them around.
Maybe we'll do a poll, a better poll that includes all the different dice.
We can certainly do that in our forums because we have more than three options to work with. So
exactly.
You know, doing other in there.
You can even roll dice in the forums, right?
Yes. Yes. We do have the dice roller hooked up in the forums. We also have the one hooked up in the Discord as well. So on our Discord server, we've got the dice roller plugged in there as well. That is kind of cool. So audience, thank you very much. And we'll catch you on our next episode of Mission and Dispatches.
Hey, good night.